paid
260 euros for a pair of Crocs, man.
Those shoes pretty much broke my foot.
It's only going downhill from here.
What up, guys? This is Josh.
And this is Fobs. And this is the Kickback Pod.
And we are back. Another episode of the Kickback Pod. I am here, JD, with my man, Fobs. And we are here for episode number 15. This one is actually a bit of an international episode. I'm across the pond, as they say, over in Toronto, Canada. And Fabian, you're not home either. You're in West Germany. And yeah, we're doing this international. Shout out to Zoom for making all this happen.
Shout out Zoom. Sponsor us.
Yeah, definitely, man. So how you been?
I'm good, man. Like you said, I'm in Düsseldorf right now, heading to Cologne on Friday, just checking out a part of Germany that I haven't really seen. It's also not really the sexiest part of Germany, but the most people in Germany live here. So it's cool to kind of, you know, get some culture and stuff like that. But you're home for the first time in like, what, 2 years now?
Man, it's been a little bit over 2 years. My trip last year, I had my tickets booked and everything, got canceled, obviously, for obvious reasons. And yeah, but I'm so happy to be back, seeing family, seeing friends after a really long time. And it is hot. It is so hot in Toronto, 35 degrees every day so far. And thank God for AC, man.
I feel you. It's pretty warm here too, but definitely not as hot and sweaty as.
Yeah. So in this episode, since we are actually doing an international episode, and also me and Fobs, we both have had experiences living both in North America as well as Europe. So that gave us the inspiration for the topic of today's episode. We'll be comparing sneaker cultures, differences in the culture between North America and Europe. Plenty to talk about there. So that's probably going to take up the chunk of the episode. And of course, we're going to touch on some big news in the sneaker world. We'll definitely talk about those missing packages. I know a lot of you guys have been affected by the Nike sneakers, your packages going missing. We'll touch on that. And of course, as always, we'll be talking latest pickups and get you ready for the upcoming week. So let's just get started, man. Let's get started with the latest pickups. Do you want to go first? I could go first also.
I'll go first because we have a same pickup this week, right? I think the protection pack.
Yes.
2002s, the light gray. And then I also picked up the white pair. I was very, very tempted to get all three colorways just because they're all so good in their own way. But, you know, I stayed sensible and I figured I don't need three same shoes kind of, although they are very different. I got the white pair, I got the light gray pair, and those are my pickups. I think my first pickups in a while, actually. Also first pickups I paid for myself in a while, I have to be honest.
So yeah, we definitely got the same pickup there. I picked up the rain cloud pair and you got the white one, which are super nice.
Yeah,
are you gonna customize them?
Like, what do you mean customize? Like cut some stuff off or what?
No. I've seen a lot of people, the white ones. I've seen a lot of people like dip dyeing them, all kinds of different colors.
I don't know. I don't have a really good pair of white sneakers, so I might keep them white for now. Okay. If they start getting scuffed up, then that's probably a good excuse to just dip dye them. I still have some dye from, I used to like dye shoes like a few years back, and I still have like some orange, some purple, some green left over. So yeah, once they get scuffed up, maybe I'll play around with that.
All right. Another pickup for me. I haven't talked about this on the pod, I don't think, but the Travis Lowe's, the Fragment Lowe's. And let me just say, I'm pretty sure I have the most blessed sneakers and stuff account in the world because on my own personal account, I hit on both the highs and the lows with the Fragments. So could not believe my luck on that. And it was an in-store raffle, so I was able to pick it up. The day before I flew to Toronto, I took the shoes with me and I've just been rocking them around the city, man. And just flexing on my hometown.
Do you like the highs or the lows better? Like now that you have had both in hand actually as well.
I got to say, man, definitely the lows. Like, and for me, it's not really that close either. Like I love the colorway on the lows. The quality on the highs is way nicer though. Like,
okay.
the quality on the highs is very similar to the highs, the original colorway, the Travis ones. The quality is amazing on the highs, but from a colorway point of view, wearability, I love the lows. And I also love the lows in the from the initial two colorways as well. So yeah, I'm glad I have both of those lows. And
that was my second. Do you have both highs as well? You have both highs.
And I have the highs as well. The OG highs. Yeah, yeah. I have the highs as well. Although I much prefer the lows. I wear the lows a lot more.
Yeah, I feel like lows are just more wearable. Like I'm not generally a big high top person anyway. Being more into like kind of runners, Asics, New Balance, that kind of stuff. And I have the what are they? The neutral gray low Air Jordan ones, and I wear them way more than my shadow highs. Like I just feel more comfortable in lows.
The neutral gray lows I just released a few weeks back, the white ones with the gray swoosh.
Yeah, like a couple months back. Yeah, yeah. I have those, and then I have the shadow ones, the highs. And I don't know. I feel like Jordan 1 high tops. Like obviously that's the classic style, but I feel like they restrict my ankle too much.
A lot of people say that.
Yeah, so I prefer definitely, and I like the way the jeans fall over the lows better than the highs. Like I feel like I always have too many like scrunched up jeans or something when I'm wearing highs.
I completely agree with you. I think Jordan 1 lows don't get enough love. It seems like it's a silhouette that's hated on by the sneaker community, but it's one of my favorite silhouettes. I think Jordan 1 lows, I even prefer them to Nike Dunk lows, but that's just personal preference. Speaking of Jordan 1s, another latest pickup for me, I picked up the Jordan 1 Electro Orange. It had like a bit of a weird release in the Europe. Like a lot of stores just got them last week. So I was able to get it for retail. And it wasn't very difficult to get it for retail. They were sitting in a lot of stores. And this is like, for me, I never miss out on Jordan 1s that have a bit of orange on them. I love orange on Jordan 1s. Like all the shattered backboard pairs are great. This particular pair, I'm going to definitely customize it. I really don't like that the back of it is just all white. I feel like it needs some orange in there. So I'm going to give it to my man, Noel, who does sneaker customizations in Berlin, and turn it into like a shattered backboard black toe colorway.
Oh, nice.
But the quality on this pair is super sick. And one final pickup. So even though I did pick up this pair quite a while ago, I just undiessed it last week. That was the Carpet Company Dunk High SBs, which is actually my favorite SB Dunk to drop this year. What a sick pair of shoes, man. I brought it with me to Toronto as well because I actually plan to skateboard. I'm actually going to be getting a skateboarding lesson today.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, man. So
from who?
From my girlfriend's younger brother. Like, he's super into skateboarding. So he's gonna take me out. I'm gonna learn a bit. I'm gonna wear my SB Dunks, try to trash them a little bit. Yeah, I'm pretty excited, man. Hopefully no accidents.
That's pretty funny, man. We gotta wear a helmet and like full gear as well, like the elbow pads, the knee pads, the hand pads.
Yeah, that's like yesterday I was like watching YouTube videos like how to skateboard, and like all the YouTube videos are like, yeah, make sure your first time you wear a helmet and all that, but then I got to go buy a helmet, man. Like, I don't have a helmet.
I'm sure there's like probably a bike helmet lying around somewhere that you can put on.
Yeah, true, true, true. Yeah, I'll for the first time, I'm going to rock a helmet today. But I'm very excited, man. I'm going to rock the SBs today. What about you? Any other pickups besides the NBs?
Nah, that's it. I have like a lot of, and we'll get to this later, but a lot of shoes that I have my eye on that are coming up soon. But no, those were the only two. And I'm actually really, really happy with them. I can't wait to actually put them on and you know, rock them.
Yeah, man, definitely, definitely. All right, so let's get into it, man. Let's get into the biggest topic that we're going to discuss today. Shout out to actually Fabian, man. You came up with the inspiration on this topic, the sneaker culture differences between the two continents, I guess, that we've lived on. Well, probably the two biggest sneaker markets out there, North America and Europe. There's tons of differences, I think, not just in the way people dress in both these places, also the sneakers that they prefer, the way they get released, the way collabs are done. There's a lot of differences. Maybe we can get started with preferences of certain models in some countries, in some continents versus Europe.
I think preference and taste is a big one, right? Because different cultures, different, you know, different ways of receiving information, different celebrities in the news, different kind of inspirations as well, all leads to different tastes, and it trickles down to the feet, and you know, means that sneakerheads in Europe and in the US definitely wear very, very different shoes. I would say maybe we can start with the different brands. So I would say, in my opinion, that, you know, Jordan Brand and Nike are number one in the US. Jordan Brand, like retro Jordans, huge. Or I want to say US and maybe North America, right? Let's just do like North America in general. In Europe, in the EU, you know, like Jordans are big, but I don't think they're as big as they are in the US because, you know, Michael Jordan was there and he's like, he's an icon. I'd say in Europe, you're more likely to find, you know, a pair of Adidas shoes or an Asics or a New Balance, like going more into this kind of like runner, runner subculture and runner aesthetic. Like, I don't know, you've lived in both places as well. Like, yeah. What differences do you see in terms of the brands that people wear?
You nailed the biggest difference for me by far. So specifically Jordan Brand. So Jordan Brand, especially growing up in Canada, that was like such a coveted thing to have just going to high school here. And it doesn't matter like the model specifically, whether it's a 1 or a 14. When Jordans released, it was such a big deal. Like anyone who wore Jordans in high school, like A, that guy had money, and B, he was also the coolest kid in school, you know? So that culture has definitely been around North America, I feel, for quite a long time, like pretty much since Jordan himself was around, you know, making those sneakers popular. So it's been a good like 3 decades now that there's a very strong Jordan culture. And I feel like Jordans have very recently, I'm just talking about Jordan 1s. Jordan 1s have, over the last 5 years, I felt, started to get popular in Europe as well. I've noticed, like, I moved to Berlin in 2017. And I really, back then, even didn't see that many people rocking Jordan 1s. But over the last, like, three or four years, I've started to see all, like, everyone rocking Jordan 1s. You know, hot colorway drops, everyone wants it. And especially among the younger crowd, like, I would say, like, between, 18-year-olds to 35-year-olds, like that crowd, Jordan 1s are right now very popular in Europe. However, those other models, like the 3s and the 4s, which in Canada and the US sell out instantly, they tend to sit over in Europe, is what I've noticed.
Yeah.
You can even look at certain like hype 3s, like for example, the Ama Manier 3s. If you look at it like on StockX, I was looking at it the other day on StockX Canada and looking at the prices because it was, they show you different prices depending on what country you're looking at. And the prices for those are just so much higher in Canada compared to what they're going for in Europe. They're going for a lot less over there. So not only that, you can see that there, but also just the fact that like 3s and 4s always sell out in the US. You know,
yeah, doesn't matter what colorway. Yeah,
exactly. Like anytime a 3 releases, it's going to sell out. But nah, in Europe, you see those going 50% off a lot of the times.
Yeah, that's true. I think it has gotten, it's changed a little bit, I think, since the pandemic with, I think, and a big driver in this was, you know, the Netflix documentary on Jordan, right? I think after that, like, a lot of Jordans started to sell out more. I don't think all Jordans that would sell out in the US sell out in Europe. But I still remember, I think it was like, what, 2017 or 2018 when like the white cement threes came out, the black cement threes, those sat here in Foot Locker. And you could get them sometimes, like you said, on 20% discount. I had friends in the US like, yo, I need these. These are going for like double retail. And like, I think I bought a pair and sent them to a friend. Just because they were so desperate to get them in the US. Now it's changed a little bit.
The other models too, like sixes, like the Carmine sixes, right? Carmine sixes released this year, super popular shoe in America. It sold out instantly everywhere. They were sitting in Europe.
That's super easy
cop in Europe.
I think it's very like colorway dependent as well. Like obviously collabs are going to sell out, right? But I think like the really like OG colorways on the OG silhouettes, those will sell out more often now than maybe 2-3 years ago in Europe. But it's definitely a much easier cop this side of the pond than it is over there, just because I think it also plays into the whole like where do these subcultures or where does the culture come from? Right. And in the US, I think Michael Jordan is sneaker culture, right? There's no way around it. Michael Jordan and Air Jordans is the beginning, the middle, and the end of US sneaker culture. Whereas that's not really the case in Europe. Sure, you have some kids and some older people who remember Jordan during his playing days, who, you know, think he's an icon, think he's a god, and love Jordans because of that. But I'd say every single person or most people into sneakers in the US point to Michael Jordan as like their gateway into sneakers. Whilst in Europe, it's very much a much different inspiration. You've got rave culture, right, in the UK and in Germany. You've got football terrace culture, right, which is where Adidas is so popular, or you have certain Puma or Reebok silhouettes that were worn during these raves. And that's why there's, I would say, much more parity between the brands in Europe as well. Like you've got different heritage brands that have this tradition of being connected to certain subcultures and movements and periods of time, which you might not have in the US. In the US, it's literally dominated by the swoosh.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you mentioned already a few sneakers that definitely seem to be a lot more popular in Europe. Like, for example, the football culture in the UK specifically. I feel like the Adidas Samba specifically was an extremely popular silhouette, and it still is to this day. There's a lot of diehard Adidas collectors there, Sambas, and what are those other ones? The Gazelles,
Specials. There's so many. Exactly. And like people who aren't into them will be like, oh, they all look the same, right? Which they do look very similar. They're all.
I mean, you could say the same thing about Jordan 1s, bro. Like they all kind of look the same too.
You could say that as well. But yeah, you're right. I mean, look at the Overkill guys, right? Like shout out Overkill. They're super into Adidas ZX, right? And that's because when they were growing up in the, you know, the 80s, the 90s, those were the cool shoes to have in East Germany, in West Germany. And like, if you had those on, you were the shit. It was similar to your story about Jordans, right? You had on the 1000 series. So like the ZX 8000, and people were like, damn, this dude spent like 120 euros, or back then it was Deutsche Mark, on a pair of shoes. Like, he's cool. He's got it. And it was a status symbol basically, but it was just a different type of status symbol as opposed to Jordans in the US.
And that ZX community that you mentioned is still super strong, at least in Berlin, that I've noticed. A lot of the ZX releases that happen in Overkill, there's still campouts for them. They're still, and they're instant sellouts here. They even have pretty decent resale that holds ZX, ZX line in Germany. And meanwhile, you go to the UK and similar things happen for the Specials. It's actually, I know people who live in the UK who tell me it's actually quite difficult to get like the really nice colorways of the Specials for retail, even though they release at a lot of locations, because of how strong that community is as well. So, yeah.
I would say in the UK... Said. In the UK as well, I think Air Max is like huge as well, right? Like Air Max is big in the US as well, but it's big in a different way in the UK through, you know, British hip hop, grime, whatever you want to call it, right? Rap. It's that kind of, you know, Skepta and JME and all those guys, they had Air Max on their feet. And sure, they got Air Max from the US, but the way that they wore it, the way that they interpreted the style and mixed it with that, you know, London, British, UK kind of aesthetic and attitude, just added this whole new dimension to the sneaker and to the sneaker series, which really made it its own. And that's why I would say that Air Max is huge in the US, but bigger, I would say, in the UK, and bigger in a different way, you know?
I totally get what you mean. It is a bit of a status symbol, and it is like a very much representative of the culture. Like when you think of grime music, you think of tracksuits and Air Max sneakers. Yeah. Right? Like that symbolizes that culture. So yeah, definitely. I mean, and now Nike, of course, realized that, you know, a lot of collabs now with the top grime artists, like Skepta has had a whole line of Air Maxes that have released. We definitely covered differences in preferences. Did you notice anything different about the way sneakers were released in North America compared to here?
I mean, back when I lived in New York, which was now what, over six years ago, which is a while, right? So things have probably changed a little bit, but I would say that it was definitely more campouts, more, you know, pandemonium sometimes as well, just because I think people were crazier for shoes in the US back then. You know, like you had what's it called? You know, like Jordan's dropping and the Foot Locker would get overrun. And I mean, we see the videos nowadays too, but it was back then, it was all the time. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was kind of getting into sneakers for the first time, it was first come first serve online a lot. And it was a lot of like the Kith A6 releases, they would sell out so quickly. Right. And me being new to the game, I was like, oh, like what do I like? Oh, I guess I'll just log in like when the drop happens and I'll probably get a pair because, you know, like I got quick fingers, whatever. Always struck out. And then when I came to Europe, when I moved to Berlin, and you know, I have to admit it was a different time, but that's when like Yeezy, Adidas Yeezy was really picking up and they had like the splash page. And that's when like splash pages started to happen and they tried to randomize it. And then raffles came. I think campouts were slowly dying out a little bit in Europe, at least when I first moved over there. So that was like around 2016-ish, 2015, 2016. And raffles really became big, but I'd say nowadays it's pretty similar in terms of how sneakers are released. But I don't know, like what have you kind of noticed?
I don't notice too many differences. One thing I did notice, and shout out to Sean Go, who's another sneaker YouTuber from Toronto. He was telling me how first come first serve releases are done here. They're a bit disorganized and people aren't really paying too much attention to people, you know, cutting in the line. And there's usually fights. It usually gets quite aggressive, like we've seen. And there's been so many, you know, viral videos about sneaker releases that happen in America. And I just do not see those type of aggressive releases happening in Europe at all. I feel like, I mean, I've done a few campouts myself in Berlin, and I've noticed that they're a lot more organized. Usually the store will have one of their employees who kind of stay all night with the people. And that guy managing the lineup, he usually has a name of all the people who arrive first. And he does a periodic check-ins, basically. So just to make sure the people are still there. So you don't technically even have to be in a straight line all night. You can, you know, go out, grab some food. You can go home, take a quick nap, as long as you come back and are present for the next roll call, I suppose, which I think is just like a way better way and much more organized way of doing a camp out rather than, you know, staying up all night and like scuffling with each other and getting aggressive, you know. So
for sure,
that's something that I feel like North America should implement more with their camp out releases.
I do have to say that I don't know about you, but I do miss camping out a little bit, or just, you know, just getting there early or trying to kind of, or just even seeing campouts, you know, like a lot of times in Berlin, if there was a sneaker that was releasing that I wasn't really interested in, but like I went out on a Friday night and I knew it was dropping on Saturday, I would like walk by a sneaker store at like, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 a.m. the day of the release. And I would see people there and like, they're chilling. They're like, I don't know, when Pokemon Go was big, they were playing Pokemon Go, or like some people, like if it was cold, like someone would get their car around and then people would take turns sitting in the car if it was too cold. Like it was just cool seeing it as well. And I'm a little bummed out that everything has moved towards raffles and just online anonymity and apps, because I do feel like the community feeling gets lost a little bit, because like you said, there's people out there that want it to be fair. They want people to follow the rules, but like it's fun when you're sitting there and you meet the people, you see the same people and you're like, oh, okay, like see you next Saturday. You know, like, I don't know. I
100%. 100%. I definitely miss that too. It's just all raffles now, even all the in-store releases, they're all raffles now, which I get it. I guess it makes sense. Obviously during this COVID era, like you can't have people just, you know, congregating in one place all night.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. And I'm hopeful, although I don't see it happening anytime soon. I'm hoping we see like the traditional campouts again. But it seems very far off though. Let's be honest.
And I mean, it's a lot of work as well for, I mean, all of this stuff is right. Raffles, making sure everything's fair. First come first serve releases, bot protection. That's all really expensive and time consuming for these retailers as well, right? Who often all they want to do is sell the shoes. They know they're going to sell, but people calling the stores and saying like, yo, what's the raffle detail? That's why you see on Instagram so often, like brands or retailers saying like, please do not call. Please do not come by the store with questions. Like all the information is here, because I know from people, you know, friends who work in retail, that it's just so stressful and time consuming, and people who want these shoes can sometimes be really demanding and rude as well, which is unfortunate. So like, I understand why they're moving towards like it being automized and randomized and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, I do miss that kind of, I don't know, human interaction as well.
Let's talk about collabs, maybe how they're done differently over in America. You had a really good point before we started recording, so maybe you can talk about that.
Yeah, so I mean, and again, let me preface this by saying that there's no hard and fast rule for any of this, right? Like a lot of the stuff we've talked about is, you know, some of them are generalizations, some of them are anecdotes. A lot has changed as well since both of us lived in the US or in North America. And in general, I think sneaker culture has become more homogenous. It's become more the same across the Atlantic. But what I noticed is that sneaker collaborations, in my opinion, are driven more by retailers in the EU or brands, maybe, you know, whilst in the US, they're driven more by celebrities or individual people. So, you know, a Virgil Abloh is the face of the Off-White Nike collaboration, right? Like technically it's an Off-White Nike collaboration, but Virgil is so big that he's the face of it. Pharrell Williams is the face of his collaboration with Adidas. Kanye West is the face of Yeezy and their work with Adidas. Even on a smaller scale, right? You can say like, yeah, Kith collaborates with New Balance, but it's Ronnie Feig who's collaborating with New Balance, Ronnie Feig who's collaborating with ASICS, because he's built such a name for himself, and rightly so. I mean, they're all super talented. They're great at what they do. And they deserve the limelight for sure. That's not what I'm trying to say, but I think in general, sneaker collaborations in the EU are very much more like retailer driven and kind of like, I don't know, like a Soulbox New Balance, Soulbox Adidas, Overkill Adidas, sneakers and stuff collaboration. It's never really like the people there, but more like the brand and what the retailer kind of represents. I don't know. Like,
yeah, that's, you think that's about that? I think that's a very fair point. There's a lot of, I guess, in the US, it seems like there's a lot of individuals, a lot of superstars who are, you know, the driving force behind the collabs. Like more recently, we had Salehe Bembury, even the Aimé Leon d'Or collabs, even though they are, of course, a brand, Aimé Leon d'Or. I feel like a lot of people just think of those as like Teddy Santis, you know, collabs. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right, man. In the EU, it's very much retailer driven, all of the collabs. I don't know when there's a Soulbox collab or SNS collab, I don't know any individual person I can point to as this is the guy who did the collab, right? Yeah. So yeah, I agree, man. That's a good point.
And I mean, that's, again, not to say like, you know, my boy Burns of Dead Hype, he had a collaboration. And again, it was more of a Dead Hype collaboration, but you knew that he was the guy with Adidas who did his ZX. You have it on the other side as well. Like you said, Aimé Leon d'Or or Bodega is doing a collaboration. Obviously, that's also retailer driven. But I would say, like you said, it's more the exception in the US that it's a retailer or kind of brand doing it, and more individual superstars, Kanye West, Travis Scott, that kind of stuff.
Right.
It might not even mean anything. I just thought it was interesting to bring up, because when I was thinking about this like podcast episode, that was like one of the things that popped into my mind. I was like, that's interesting. So I guess if anyone's listening and has thoughts on that, please, you know, let us know, let me know what you guys think, and maybe we're wrong. You know, maybe I missed out some retailers on the US side and some individuals on the European side.
Yeah, and also, guys, if you haven't already done so, make sure you go on iTunes and give us a good review. Get those reviews up. We definitely need them. And thank you. Thank you once again for listening, as always. Just to quickly wrap up this topic, bit of a tough question, but what do you think overall, which area, Europe or North America, where do you think you see an overall stronger sneaker culture?
Oh man, I mean, there's no way that I can say one is stronger than the other, just because they're so different in many ways. They're so similar in other ways. And when it comes down to it, like it's more like, which one do I prefer? And I prefer the European, I don't even want to say culture, but I just prefer the releases in Europe, because I'm more of a New Balance, ASICS, Adidas kind of guy. or runner kind of guy. And that's kind of more what you get in Europe as opposed to the retro Jordans. But nowadays everything's so globalized and international. Like, I don't know, like just to derail this slightly, but like I wrote down some similarities, right? And so both the US and Europe are obsessed with technology and comfort, right? Air, Nike Air, Boost, the excitement for these technologies you see on both sides, you know? And both types of sneakerheads are both sneakerheads from different areas. You do it because you want to stand out, right? You have like a, if you know approach, you're wearing cool shoes, whether you're in London, whether you're in Miami or wherever, you know that like if you see someone with a cool shoe or you're wearing a pair of cool sneakers and you see someone looking and you look at them and you catch their eye, it's the same on both sides, right? And I think both are very tight-knit communities as well. I mean, like you probably have a lot of followers or a lot of viewers as well on YouTube who, you know, you've got like discourse groups, you've got Reddit chats, whatever, with people, whether they're in the US or in Europe. So I don't know. It's super hard to say. I would say just because my personal aesthetic preference is runners, I prefer Europe. Also, I live in Europe. But, you know, there's a lot of things about the U.S. sneaker culture historically and traditionally that I love, I appreciate, and I miss as well because, you know, I used to work right next to Kith, and that was like my go-to spot literally 3-4 times a week.
Yeah, no, of course. I think for me, the way I'd answer that question is it depends on what the definition of strong sneaker culture is. If the definition is which area seems to have more people interested in sneakers, then I just feel like based on my experience, North America wins that battle. Definitely when you go to some of the bigger cities like New York or LA, what I notice is it seems like everyone is rocking Heat, you know, like it seems That's like everyone is wearing Jordans. You don't see them as frequently as you do in Europe. In Europe, yeah, every now and then, you know, you'll notice someone rocking like a nice pair or something limited. Whereas I feel like in the US, everyone's rocking some kind of Heat, you know, or at least Definitely. In the big cities, not in the smaller cities, of course, it goes city by city. But
right, but you have to compare like the big US cities with the big European cities, right?
Right.
I would say London probably comes closest to
for sure
to America in that regard. But like if you're walking through Berlin, right, which is a city of 3 million, and you're walking through Brooklyn, which is 3 million people or maybe a little bit more now, you're going to see way more people wearing retro Jordans, Kith releases, whatever, in Brooklyn than you are.
I mean, I stand by my point, though. I think just from a numbers point of view, I would say America wins this battle.
Definitely, yeah.
So let's quickly get into the news then. I know we talked a lot about this, about the differences in culture, but we'll quickly touch on the news. Should we talk about the missing packages first?
Oh, yeah. Let's. Why don't you fill us in? Like, what happened there? Like, who are we blasting this time for missing packages?
Well, it seems to be there's one specific release that this happened with, and that is these exclusive access, the 50 Off-White Nike Dunks. So it seems like, first of all, this particular release, there seems to have been way more pairs than people expected. I've seen some blogs say there was upwards of 300,000 pairs. And yeah, I put a poll up on my Instagram asking how many guys got a W, and 33% of people said they got W's, which is extremely high. It definitely wasn't as limited.
Dude, man, they dropped, what was it, like last week? And I was walking around, I saw 3 pairs in Berlin on separate occasions, and in Düsseldorf, which, you know, isn't like the sneaker hotspot of Germany, although there are some cool stores here. You know, shout out a few. I've seen like 6 or 7 people wearing them, man. Like, and
no way, really?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I went to okay. One was like a guy who worked in a cool store here. So like obviously he would have them, but like I saw so many people wearing them. And for me, when there's usually like, let's say like the Off-White Nike Air Jordan 4s, right? When those drop, it took you a while to see them in the wild, right? Like, like you would see them and be like, oh fuck, like that's rare. Like, oh, somebody's actually wearing them and they didn't, you know, just send them off to StockX. But here, so many people are rocking the 50, man. It shows me that they definitely weren't as limited as people thought, which, you know, is cool. A lot of people got their hands on them, but surprising for sure.
Yeah, but going back to this topic, so in the States, it seems like this particular release, a lot of people, their order just seems to have not reached them. They were shipped out, and there was no shipping updates for many days. Packages seem to be missing, specifically from FedEx. FedEx seems to be the main culprit here. This kind of thing, I don't see it happening. I order so many sneakers, all right? Like, I make sneaker YouTube videos, right? So in any given week, I'll have like seven or eight packages coming in. And I'll be honest, like, to this day, I've never had a package stolen by any kind of delivery service in Germany. And it's been like a good 3 to 4 years of me collecting sneakers now. And but the frequency at which this seems to happen in North America, oh, that's funny. We're going back to like our main topic. Shit gets stolen a lot more there. But yeah, the frequency at which this seems to happen in North America is quite high. And I don't know, like, who do you think is at fault here, right? Like, is it like who should get the blame? Is it the big brands or is
Nah,
it the
definitely not.
delivery partner?
I mean, obviously it's Nike's financial and legal responsibility until it gets into your hands, right? If you order something and you pay the money for something, it's their responsibility to get it to you safely. But that being said, they are contracting FedEx, USPS, whatever, UPS. In this case, it was FedEx, which is a huge reputable company with, insurance, legal, whatever. Like they are covered across the board and they are losing packages, most likely being stolen by, I don't know. I don't want to say FedEx drivers, maybe somebody at the parcel factory, whatever. But there's been too many reports for it to be a coincidence, right? So I would say 95% or 99% of the blame lies on FedEx. I would say 1% maybe Nike, where like don't put Nike tape or branding all over it because it seems that whoever is doing this, right? Whoever's making these packages get lost is seeing the Nike tape on there, sees the brand and says, okay, there's probably something interesting in here. Or, oh, I know, like there's been some pretty hype releases. There's a good chance that this is a hype release, right? So I would say Nike should maybe stop putting branding on the packages and just ship like a super plain looking box. But at the same time, like FedEx, check your employees, man. Like, fuck that.
But the fact that it happens so much makes me think that from FedEx side and also from whatever other delivery partners, it seems like the repercussions of this happening aren't very high. So it's possible that for any, I don't know how it works, obviously, I'm just purely speculating, but maybe, there's a certain amount of packages that can get lost for each driver. They have like some kind of allowance there, you never know. And maybe just the repercussions aren't that bad or for an individual, so he is more incentivized to steal stuff. I don't know, like I'm purely speculating. I don't know how it works, but it definitely seems to be happening way more over there. And yeah, I mean, I don't know what Nike can really do. I mean, they're hiring the best delivery people in the business, best, the most reputable companies. What can you really do if
Well, I
they
mean,
keep getting
also,
stolen?
like at the end of the day, what was it like? Maybe 100 people, right? And if on Twitter complaining about this, if there were really 300,000 pairs, and let's say it was 300 people, then that's 1% of all people who ordered a pair of shoes, right? That lost their stuff. Nike's not going to move mountains for 1%. They're going to be like, you know what? Sorry that happened. Not really our fault, but here's a full refund or credit to buy something else, right? And that's the best they can do. If let's say half or 25 or 30% of all packages were being stolen, then I would expect Nike to be like, all right, FedEx, what's up? Like, if you keep doing this, we're going to take our business elsewhere and you're going to lose tens of millions of dollars a year on shipping because we're going to go with USPS because they don't steal our stuff, right? But yeah, I think it's a uniquely American thing because when I browse Reddit sometimes, I'll see videos of like they call them like porch bandits, right? Where people like steal other people's mail hoping that it's something
Oh, wow.
valuable, right? And it's not always like the delivery person who does it, right? Sometimes it's a neighbor or somebody who like drives by. And I've seen this so many times where like people drive by in a car and then somebody will jump out of the car, run up to the porch and then like grab something. And the people have like a security camera there, right? Because it's happened so much. And I don't think I don't own a
Well,
house. I don't live like I live in the city. So usually my packages are either delivered straight to me or to a neighbor. But I've also never had anything stolen. I don't think that it happens that much in Europe.
You just raised a very good point because I noticed that too. So now that I'm back in Canada, I ordered something from I forget what company, but anyways, they delivered the package to my house and they just left it outside, like in front of my door. So they didn't even like ring my bell or anything. They literally just left the package on my front door. Mm-hmm. So it's very possible someone could have come by and just taken it. And from living in Germany now for the last 4 years, that is not how companies deliver packages there. What they do is like, if you're not home, they're not just going to leave the package at your door. Like they're most likely what they're going to do is give it to a neighbor. And then they will, in your mailbox, leave you a note telling you exactly which neighbor has your shoes. So there's like, you know, exactly if your shoe got stolen, you know who took it. Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I think that's one major difference. Like they seem to just leave stuff at the front door for anyone to take them. Right. Like it's
ridiculous. Yeah. I think it's also, I mean, we can talk about this for hours actually, but like, I think a lot of times it's because these drivers, these delivery guys, they have to hit certain targets in a certain amount of time, right? They have their route right. And they have to finish it in, I don't know, let's just say 6 hours, but they have 600 packages. So they have to deliver 100 packages an hour. So what they're doing is they're running, boom, and they're not going to ring and then wait 30 seconds or a minute for you to open your door. They're just going to drop it and mark it as delivered. And then you get a notification that it was delivered and you open it up. But that, you know, that aside, like there is definitely a big problem in the US, or not a big problem, but a problem that people steal other people's mail, and also that shit just, you know, goes missing sometimes. Like maybe it's the driver, maybe it's the person in the factory, maybe it's the delivery driver. Like there's so many links in the chain that it's impossible to tell. It's just, it can't be a coincidence that like several dozens of people have complained about it on Twitter, you know, and it's shitty. Like I get it, but at the end of the day, like there's nothing anyone can really do about it.
Let's move on to the next topic. We'll cover the Nike new release method that they're doing on the co.jp release, which I thought was super interesting. So for those of you who don't know, there's a bunch of Japanese exclusive Nike releases from the last 20 to 30 years. And Nike is kind of deciding which ones they should retro again. So they decided to, at least in Japan, ask the people which ones that they want to see retroed. So they're doing a sneaker contest, kind of like March Madness style. So putting sneakers against each other, vote which one you want to see. And then the winner moves on to the next round. And it's essentially basically the people who are going to decide which sneaker gets retroed. And I thought that was really cool. And I'm like, why didn't they think of this idea sooner? I mean, this is something people would love, even in America, I mean, or Europe.
They did that actually for Air Max Day 2018, I think it was, where they had like different designs from, you know, they had like the Nike Air workshops around the world. And then, I don't know, 15 people get invited. And then of those 15, one design would win. And then they would like vote for which design should be actually made. So they actually did that in a slightly different way for Air Max Day, which was cool. Like there were a couple of Air Max 97s that released. I'm pretty sure the Sean Wotherspoon pair was also voted to be made the year before. So basically you vote the year, like you vote in 2018 and then the shoe that wins comes out in 2019, which is cool. And, or like when they retroed the Atmos, what was it? Elephant print Air Max One. I think that was voted on the year prior as well. Mm-hmm. So it's not like totally new, but the fact that they're now like going back into the vault and checking out these like 15 or whatever it is, 20 Japan exclusive pairs, and then asking sneakers users, what do you want to see in a worldwide release or a global release is super cool. And there's like, if you have, obviously most of you will have the sneakers app, go check it out. You can vote as well for, I think there's actually, by the time you listen to this, you can't vote for the first round anymore, but you can vote for the second round. And there's some really, really cool sneakers there, like some really like outlandish designs as well that I've never seen before. That would be really cool to get in like a global release.
Let's quickly talk about this last topic. I know it's not really sneaker related, but let's touch on it, man. Supreme's opening up a store in Berlin. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you care?
Surprisingly, like a 7, which is high because I used to be like Thursdays, man, I was on my computer at 12. I'd be like trying to cop that new Supreme. And then, you know, my interest kind of faded, and I thought that like some of the collaborations they did weren't that exciting. A lot of the accessories weren't as cool as they used to be. Maybe I just grew out of it. I don't know. But the fact that a Supreme store is now opening in my city, in our city, it does pique my interest a little bit. Like, I know that they have, you know, a bunch of Nike collabs sometimes, and those are pretty cool most of the time. And I just think it would be cool to like go pick something up in store. You know, I've only ever bought stuff online. Am I going to be the biggest Supreme head again? Probably not. I assume it's the same for you, right? It's just like cool to check out.
Definitely. Like I'm totally with you. For me, I would say it's more of an, I would give it an 8 because for exactly what you said, it's so cool to have a Supreme store in your city. And based on the rumored location, it's supposed to be in Mitte on Torstrasse. If that were to happen, that would be amazing because that's a very short walk for me. So I'd be able to, you know, check out the releases. So I'm excited to have that in the city. Of course, like Supreme, the brand, like, you know, the exclusivity of having a Supreme piece, the coolness factor, I guess, of it, definitely not what it once was. It's now it belongs to a corporation who have, you know, much bigger profit incentives. So that's why we're seeing this expansion, I guess. So from that point of view, it's not that great, but I'm pretty excited. Especially, I'm a big fan of Supreme accessories, you know, like just stuff to put around the house, like that look cool. So I would be hyped to just, you know, go in store, grab one of those pieces just for the crib. But yeah, I mean, it's cool. I like that it's coming to Berlin. Let's get to the upcoming sneakers. There's a lot, man. There's a lot coming out of the next 2 weeks. I have 4 pairs here. So I'll quickly go over some of them. So first of all, I was talking about orange Jordan 1s earlier in the episode. There's a pair coming out on the 28th, the Shattered Backboard Jordan 1 Low. And it's supposedly done in the OG style as well. The OG Shattered Backboard Jordan 1 Lows. I'm definitely very hyped about this pair. I love orange and orange on Jordan 1s and on a Jordan 1 Low. Yeah, man. Like the Shattered, the high top is one of those pairs, like one of my favorite Jordan 1s ever that I don't own. So I'm definitely going to be copying this low top version. What do you think about that release?
I think it's pretty cool. I find orange hard to wear personally, but I know you're a big fan of the Syracuse Dunk Lows, right?
Right.
And the Dunk Highs. And so these kind of are similar to that, but you were also saying earlier that the Air Jordan 1 Lows you prefer over the Dunk Lows. So it's almost the perfect release for you, right? Like you got
to
get
them. I'm probably going to sell my Dunk Low, to be honest. Like as soon as I cop this, and I'm hoping to cop it, I don't think they're going to be too hard to get. There's going to be a men's and a women's release.
Because
even the neutral gray Jordan 1 Lows, I thought those would be much harder to get than they actually were. They turned out to be just like a widely available pair.
And sleeper pairs.
And super sleeper, man. Amazing quality on that pair. But I'm going to be getting these, and I'll probably end up selling my Syracuse pair after I get these. Moving on to some Jordan 4s, the Lightning 4s. They are also going to be dropping on the 28th. From what I've seen, the leather seems pretty decent. It's suede, right? Not leather. Suede on the upper.
I think it's like suede or nubuck or something. It's not smooth leather.
Actually, you're right. It is nubuck. This pair also coming out on the 28th. And fans of the Jordan 4, if you look at the OG release of this pair on StockX right now, they're going for, you know, well over 1,000 in every size, well over 1,500, 2,000 in some sizes. So people are pretty hyped to have these back. The Fragment Sakai Waffle Racers, they already had a EU release a couple of days ago, but the worldwide North American release will be happening in the next couple of weeks. Another one of those triple collabs that, you know, you and me have hated on a lot on this pod. And I'm also quite indifferent about this pair. The blue one is all right, but it's something about the writing on it. I don't know if you feel the same way. The writing on the heel, I just really don't like that font. It looks like someone typed it on Microsoft Word and like stuck it on there, you know?
It says like usually Fragment like sneakers will have like some sort of like numeric code on there, like a color code or something like that, like a colorway code. I think these ones say the classic. Nike X Sakai, right? And it's just like, what? I have to admit, like, we hated on these three-way collaborations a lot. I do like these. I like the gray and I like the navy. I missed them on the European release just because I was traveling and like on holiday and just wasn't checking my phone that often. If I do get them resale or, you know, end up getting a pair, I will definitely scratch out that text on the midsole because I think it looks ridiculous.
Yeah. Why does it say the classic anyways? Like, since when has Sakai and Fragment been like a classic? Isn't that like a new collab? I'm a little bit confused.
It's a reference to the Waffle Racer being a classic, right? So, or the Tailwind, sorry. So it's a reference to the Tailwind or whatever the, I think Tailwind or Waffle Racer, whatever shoe was the inspiration. It's a reference to that being the classic, but it's just like, I don't know. It's weird putting that on the sole.
Yeah, for sure. And the last one I want to talk about, two more. The Social Status Dunks. Have you seen those?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like the strawberry ice cream colorway. So there's going to be a mid and a low top.
Very, very well.
I really want those lows, the pink ones.
I think lows are only in children's sizes. Yeah, so I think both pairs are actually mids, but they're not actually mids. So when I was talking to James about this, he was very particular that like they're higher than lows and they're lower than highs, but they're also slightly higher than mids or something like that. So they're not actually Nike Dunk mids. They're just the Social Status Nike Dunks because the shoe has never existed before. They made the specific height and the design exactly as Social Status wanted it. So a very, very special pair. Anyone who's trying to cop a pair, like, good luck. I think they're going to be quite limited, but they're really, really nice.
Yeah, definitely. And the last one I want to quickly touch on, another Jordan 4 pair. This one is being called the Shimmer. And I don't know if you've seen it, but if you missed out on that off-white Jordan 4, these are looking nice.
I'm going to get these for sure. So it's a woman's release, but it goes up to like 44 and a half, which is like what, a US 11, something like that, US 11 and a half.
No, that is unfortunately a US 10 and a half, which sucks for me because as usual, they never make my size in these woman releases, man. And I would have loved to grab this pair. Are you kidding me, man? Like,
yes,
of course I wanted the off-whites.
So I had these in my list as well. And I love the off-whites. Couldn't afford them after they dropped because I definitely missed out on them. I definitely like these. I like these a lot. And I've been meaning to pick up a four. I wanted the Top Haze, maybe the UNCs, but unwilling to pull the trigger on the resale prices at the moment. So the Shimmer might have to be the one. Really like that one. Then I have a couple more. I don't know if you're done.
I'm done. Yeah, go ahead. Go for it.
So Double Taps is doing a New Balance 990 V2, like a really nice all gray sneaker, which, you know, their 992 was amazing last year. It was like that kind of like cool military style. And the 990 is definitely going to be a nice one. Then the Joe Fresh Goods New Balance 990 V3 is getting a global release, I think September 9th or 10th, if I remember correctly. Those are going to be more widely available than before. I'm hoping to hit on a pair because, you know me, I love New Balance. We both love the V3s the most as well. And I just love Joe Fresh Goods color blocking, man. He's just next level. And then I had two more actually. So I had the Nike Air Jordan 7 Bordeaux, which is another classic colorway that, you know, is kind of, I don't know, I guess up for discussion as to how many people actually like it. I'm not a huge fan, but I know that there are people out there who do love the Bordeaux and they love the Jordan 7. Not for me, but if you're looking to cop that, I think that drops end of August, beginning of September at some point. And then dropping on August 27th, I believe, is the ASICS Gel 1130. Which I thought was cool. It's dropping at, you know, retailers such as Sneakers and Stuff, or, you know, most of the general retailers will have this one. And it's a very 2000s, like it's got big hole mesh. It's got ASICS branding and like nice poppy colors. And the best thing is it's a sub 90 euro shoe, right? So like, if you're looking for something on a budget, like a nice late summer, early fall shoe, I cannot recommend ASICS gel shoes more. And the 1130 is looking pretty sleek.
Damn, that's a lot of releases for 2 weeks, man. That's crazy.
Yeah, I feel like August, like late August, is really heating up because I think there was a period earlier this summer where there wasn't really much going on. There were a couple weeks where like nothing major apart from the Travises, right? There was nothing else that was good. I think the next few weeks, maybe next month and a half, is going to be difficult for many people's wallets.
Not for me, because you can't cop anything up here in Canada, man. You know, they don't even have a sneakers app, first of all.
I know, but you
And
have a size store now, right?
yeah, we do have a size store, but dude, there is a sneakers desktop version, and every release happens at 6 a.m.
Oh, man.
Like, can you imagine waking up? Like, I've tried. So I tried to wake up for, I had my alarm for the Fragments and also I forget, it was another release a couple of weeks ago. I couldn't do it. Like, I'm not waking up at six, man. It's too much.
Might as well just like stay awake at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but that's about it, man. Wow, that was a pretty lengthy episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Yeah, man, always good to talk to my man Fobs. And of course, guys, already mentioned it. If you are enjoying this pod, share it with a friend, anyone you know who's into sneakers. We would appreciate it. Thank you for all the new listeners. You guys are definitely awesome. Kickback pod, share with your friends, give us a review on Apple Music. And yeah, man, we'll see you guys in 2 weeks' time. But until then, take care. We're out.
Peace.